Well, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Today is the 13th of August, 2013, and, well, yesterday was Madame Blavatsky's birthday. Somehow, it's always important. I think she was born in 1833, was it? I can't remember whether it's 1833 or 31, but... she was such an important figure in our work. And I also must say that this is the 26th anniversary of the founding of the University of the Seven Rays. I guess we missed her birthday by one day. But somehow it all came upon us as something worth doing on August 13th, 1987, and we created a chart and started the process immediately. So it helps to be perhaps reminded of these things because they are important points in the fulfillment of life purpose. We are in Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries. I guess I have to keep the word webinar in there because otherwise it could be confused with the Cosmic Fire commentaries which are written. We're on page 1210 and we have finished discussing the creative hierarchies, the work of these builders, and we've looked at them in different ways, as if the ray is the positive force and they somehow a more negative emanation of the logos, or as if they are groups of monadic lives who have to work through the rays considered as veils. These are two apparently opposite points of view, and the Tibetan brings them both forward, and they have to be reconciled. Let's see, here are the statements along that line. The rays are the primordial forms of certain lives who carry in their hearts the seed of form. And the hierarchies are the manifold groups of lives at all stages of development and growth who will use the form. So obviously the hierarchies are in a superior position. The rays are vehicles and are therefore negative receivers. The hierarchies are the users of these vehicles, and it is in the nature of these lives and the quality of their vibration, which is under this great law of attraction, and is the nature of these lives and the quality of their vibration, which, under this great law of attraction, brings to them the needed forms. These are the two primal distinctions, life in form, and these two are the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, in his form-building aspect. So, but here, at another point, let us bear carefully in mind that the rays are the positive aspect in manifestation and pass down into negative matter, deva, or hierarchical substance, thus carrying certain evidences of activities. The hierarchies are the negative aspect as far as the rays are concerned, and are responsive to ray impulse. And I explained what I call the leapfrogging tendency here of the ABAB, you know, with the lower AB being the lower correspondence of the higher AB. B is lower than A, but the higher correspondence to B, B positive, is higher than A. And of course the higher A is higher than higher B. And this seems to be the way it works. Rays can be vehicles through which a hierarchy works, but then that qualified energy, which works out as a ray energy, affects a lower hierarchy. So if the Tibetan presents such a apparently clear contradiction, there must be a way to reconcile it. And I've done what I can I won't say to reconcile it, but I would say to point in the direction of reconciliation. All the monads are form builders. They have to build with quality, and the form is shaped according to that geometrization, which we call quality. The ray is a geometrizing energy which provides quality to the form. Let's see if I can. The ray is a geometrizing energy which provides quality to matter and thus creates external form. The ray, in a way, is a subtle form of geometrized energy. Well, to my way of thinking, the monad is absolutely the essential factor. It is pure being, and even a ray has a monad. It's like devas have monads. It's just that the energy expression of a ray is very devic-like in a way. It's a connecting factor, qualifying, connecting, shaping factor, but it's nowhere near as tangible as some of the denser forms which are qualified by it and are given shape by it. These are subtle matters, and DK said it's very difficult, but he has given us, you know, a good teacher, I think, a great teacher in his case, gives us contradictions or apparent contradictions over which we can ponder and invoke some sort of intuitive reconciliation of the apparent contradiction. I always have to say apparent contradiction because in the case of a master, there are not going to be real contradictions. There will be contradictions depending on one's perspective and depending on the time context in which a particular factor is viewed. It may be in one particular context at one time and in another at another time. So there's a relativity of relationship which is determined by point of view and also by time context and maybe even by space context. We're here working further. The work of building forms will never be understood till the true function of the etheric body is realized. Now, as you know, so many people feel that the psychology or the psyche comes out of matter. And this is, you know, obviously a mistake. The psyche does not emerge from matter. As if we can account for aberrant behavior because of the somehow the genetic pool from which materially we seem to arise. We don't have a true idea of subtle form building. This etheric body, it is the attractive agent for those lives which are so low an order as to be occultly inert. Though, you know, in other words, incapable of directing themselves. These lives which are not included in the list of hierarchies. And this is, okay, this is good to know. Important, this is important. Because the most material lives are not included in the table of creative hierarchies. Are acted upon by the sixth and seventh groups by the energy emanating from them. So this is the heaviest residue. These inert lives are the heaviest residue of the previous solar system. They are stirred from the inertia in which they have rested and are driven to take their place and to form the concrete vehicles of all that is. They form that congestion which appears as a material density. But the hierarchies are actually that which moves them. The creative hierarchies, however, are that which moves and drives them into position, or which maybe attracts them into position. Because we are looking here at the etheric body as having magnetism. It's an attractive agent. So this is such a fine and important distinction. We cannot say that the very lowest forms of lives are the very are actually members of a creative hierarchy. The true life is etheric, and the outer inert lives that gather around the true form, well, are secondary. The so-called inert lives are magnetically gathered around the true form, or perhaps driven into a true form, which the sixth creative hierarchy and seventh creative hierarchy provide, and the other hierarchies as well. So, what we have to say about all this is true form is etheric. They are the lowest manifestation of that which is of that which is abstract. They are the densest concretion of spirit. They are the failures of the system preceding this, and their failure is so complete from the standpoint of consciousness that all the response they can make to the positive vibration of the seventh hierarchy is simply to be attracted. So we would be wrong to think that the seventh creative hierarchy is material in the dense sense. Be incorrect to think that the seventh creative hierarchy is material in the sense of material density. These lives, they can be occultly drawn into place, but only at the close of this solar system will they be in a position to become the seventh creative hierarchy. The seventh creative hierarchy of the next solar system. Right, while I was talking, my network connection was discontinued and reestablished, so I hope that everything is in order. Anyway, I'm glad that DK note the distinction between the inert lives on their way to becoming the seventh creative hierarchy of the next solar system, and the seventh creative hierarchy of this solar system, a group of lives which are higher than the inert lives. So that should be quite clear to us, and of course this is something that is taken up here in a treatise on cosmic fire and was not immediately perhaps relevant to the discussion, the astrological discussion of the hierarchies in esoteric astrology. Okay. The goal for that which is not a principle is that it shall become a vital principle through the play of energy upon it. And some of that play, or much of that play, is the play of the driving and magnetic force of ray energy. We are dealing here with that mysterious something which has been called, quote, the refuse of that which earlier was seen. Namely, I suppose, the previous solar system. With that latent energy which hid the lowest vibration of the system before ours. With that latent energy which hid the lowest vibration of the system before ours, and which was so heavy, so inert, as to be regarded beyond the ken of the Logos. He was unaware of it, and the object before these peculiar lives, which live, and yet are occultly dead, and as DK is saying, in terms of consciousness, is that they must force themselves into the range of his conscious control. So this means that they are becoming a principle. By response to those lives which are consciously directed by him, i.e., which already are principles, and who are, therefore, the saviors of the lowest. So, in this case, these lives who are at the heart of every atom, the seventh creative hierarchy, are the saviors of the inert aspects which can only respond, but cannot in any way drive other lives or magnetize other lives. They are simply moved about in a way. So this lowest group of non-hierarchical lives is simply moved about, driven or magnetized. And its task is to respond and later become the lowest principle in the next incarnation of our solar logos. And I suppose with any solar logos, these lives do exist, but we have an unusual, we have a unusual residual situation, quite a big residual situation, because just as there was a failure on the moon chain, one gathers that certain happenings in the previous solar system amounted to a systemic failure as well. And so the legacy of failure is the burden of the present. Past failure is the burden of the present. And we are presented with a quite heavy third ray inertia, which we have to overcome. We have inherited it from the previous solar system as the primordial ray, the third ray, and all the forms of matter which are correlated with it. Tamas, the tamasic aspect, we have to overcome the inertia of these occultly dead lives. Nothing is really dead. Everything actually has soul and some form of consciousness, but it's of a very low order here. And it does represent a burden on all incarnating lives. Incarnating man finds it as a burden. And sometimes, you know, when we just can't get the physical vehicle to move or to respond as it should, we are really being burdened by the inertia of lives which are conditioned according to a previous pattern and not according to the pattern which is intended to be impressive and conditioning in this solar system. So it's the ongoing question of the relationship between the two and the three. And even the four is involved in it, in a sense, because, you know, you have Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is still in the realm of vitality, but the what is sometimes called the mother aspect involves these inert units. And, of course, that's not the mother aspect on all levels, but attaching the term mother aspect to the residue of the previous solar system and to the inert lives, which must be reconditioned. So all inert lives must be reconditioned according to the plan, let us say, of this particular solar system in which consciousness is being developed. All right, friends, that's it for DK's discussion of the spiritual hierarchies. And I think I'd spent about 10 programs on the subject in the Esoteric Astrology Adventures series, and when I look at this, it looks more like, I don't know, maybe 11, 12 programs this time. So there's no way to get through this material without really attending to it as meticulously as possible. And as I've said, if there are some tendrils of thoughts or ideas that can help to constellate a real revelation, a real intuitive revelation at some point, then I will have done my task. Meanwhile, I can't say that I've really brought any kind of closure to this subject, but only thought tendencies which direct towards intuitive closure. Closure is the realization of that which is. The truth appears, and all of the suppositions and speculations of reasoning give way to revelation. That's my purpose, to direct thought in such a manner that it points towards revelation. It's nothing that I can guarantee, given the difficulty of this subject and the further development which I myself have to go through in order really to see these things. So we're all on our way to true sight. That's what we are trying to develop as we ponder and speculate upon these abstruse matters which the Tibetan has presented to us, because they are important, he believes they're important, and it's important for us to consider them. Well, now we're going to go on to another subject altogether, and it is the subject of group unity. Well, when you study the Tibetan's books, the whole idea of group unity is an idea frequently brought forward and considered necessary. The contrast is always being made between the tendencies of the personality and of the personality within the group and true group consciousness leading to a state of spiritual integrity within the group, which we call group unity. It is an objective for the Aquarian Age. For the age of Aquarius, the oneness of the human mind, the oneness of the human soul. It is going to be the group age, and we will begin. We will begin to live beyond our ring past knot, as if our true identity extends beyond our ring pass knot. And for so many people, you know, their isolated personhood is the extent of their identity, but when you can live beyond your ring pass knot, you can begin to say, I am the group, and it doesn't stop there, you know. I am the group, which is group consciousness, leads to I am the whole, which is universal consciousness. And both are sought after during the Aquarian age. Group unity must be viewed somewhat from the mystical standpoint. What can this mean? You know, understood through feeling, perhaps. It is a truism in occultism to say that nothing stands alone, yet it is a fact that each infinitesimal part of the whole has three relations. Those units which form its body of manifestation, so to lesser units, which are within the unit considered, and the term intra is often used here rather than inter, because inter suggests interaction between units, and intra suggests interaction within a particular unit. So it has three relations to the to those units, which are they are lesser, and to its own unitary life, to itself as a whole, as when a human being realizes his or her identity and integrated wholeness, and is not so much thinking about the various constituent parts, and to that greater unity of which it forms a part. And I suppose I would say that not only to the unity, but to the other units within that greater unity. It's the, you know, this is the problem. We are addressing the problem, P problem, of the one and the many, PBM. I think I'll make an abbreviation. And PB, physical body, PBM, a problem. Okay, the one and the many. We have to solve this because we are always caught in the perception of the many at first, and our task is to find the substanding one, not only in all the many, but the substanding one who is all the many. So we must find the substanding one, the substanding one, who is the many. One of the main things which, it has been said, underlies logoic purpose is the working out of ways which will result in true group unity, and yes, since this is a second ray solar system, and a group unity is one of the major objectives of the second ray energy. All that is to be seen might be regarded as a gigantic endeavor on the part of a great intelligence to produce a group so interesting. To bring us into right relation. And this would mean to bring all factors and units into right relationship. And evolution is to be regarded, therefore, as a vast experiment with this objective in view. So, evolution exists for the purpose of bringing about a gigantic group unity. And this will, of course, entail a harmony and, harmony and mutual supplementation and benefit. Each unit will function to the enhancement of the other units contained within the greater unity. This is hardly the case right now. We have so many frictional relationships which operate to the detriment of the other units within the larger whole. We have competition, the idea that somehow one unit must come out on top and other units must lose and be defeated. It's a very primitive point of view, and it's a very Martian point of view. And the idea of the fourth ray of harmony after conflict or through conflict is not accepted. And it is dominated by a kind of primitive egoism, which simply means that the consciousness is identified with a very narrow, very small circle and fails to realize its kinship with the whole and with the consciousness that works through that whole. But this is the purpose. Eventually, evolution will bring about the requisite elevation of consciousness so these realizations can occur. This triple responsibility above referred to exists for the atom or for the solar logos. And the trend of the evolutionary process is to make each unit microcosm and macrocosm an intelligent cooperator responsive to the forces impinging upon it externally and aware of its own internal economy. That's stage one, and of the latent forces and energy which it has to contribute to the good of the whole. Well, related to stage three, and of course it has to also understand itself as a unit, which would be more stage two. Man standing as he does at the middle point in evolution, at least upon our planet, and marking the stage in the evolution of consciousness where a triple awareness is possible. Awareness of individuality, that's sort of the stage two, awareness of the forces which are subhuman and must be controlled, and awareness of a place within the plan and purpose of a greater man. So let's look at these. The individuality is his wholeness. That's we call this in relation to the tabulation immediately above, to its own unitary life. We call this stage two, awareness of the forces which are subhuman and which must be controlled. We call this stage one, and awareness of a place within the plan and purpose of a greater man, capital M, stage three, must therefore rightly be regarded as the most important of the evolutions, at least within the immediate context, because upon man depends much. Upon man, the cohesion within the whole very much depends. Not entirely, of course, but much. For through him can be worked out intelligently the laws of group unity for all the three groups, superhuman, human, and subhuman. There are orientations to three groups. A man has orientation to these three groups and can work intelligently with respect to them. It sounds like we are getting into the laws of the soul. Laws of the soul, which D.K. expanded in a later book, Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. So the Treatise on Cosmic Fire was the seed of so much which came afterwards. And if we are fortunate enough, we can perhaps get into that Esoteric Psychology book and discuss the laws of the soul as we did for many years during the University of the Seven Rays esoteric psychology classes. Those were really maybe our most popular classes, a very important subject on the second ray largely, though the fifth ray has its contribution to make, considering esoteric psychology as an important way of teaching truth for the fifth ray. Very interesting. So the study of the seven rays and of esoteric astrology and of the science of the four centers, it's all part of the great science of esoteric psychology. And even the book we're reading right now, A Treatise on the Cosmic Fire, is considered to be a psychology book, kind of, in a way, a systemic and cosmic psychology book, but psychology nonetheless. The relationship of the different entities according to their energy qualities and their function within the whole membership in which they all share. So above him stand those who are too pure, or as it is called, too cold, or, you know, what's too cold, too unresponsive to lower energies, to be immersed in the matter of the three worlds. And in this case, we have just studied some of these groups of beings in terms of the liberated creative hierarchies and the three higher of the manifested creative hierarchies. We've just studied them. Below him are found those lives which are too impure, occultly understood, or too full of burning matter and veiled in smoke. What would we say? Too much immersed. In fire by friction, can we say too much? I mean, they are occupying and performing the role that they have to. But they are, in a sense, a man is overly responsive to them. Man is overly responsive to them and must learn detachment from these elemental lives. Too full of burning matter and veiled in smoke, i.e. in obscurity, and producing obscurity and distortion and veiled vision, to be able to mount, of themselves into the regions where stand the unveiled sons of God. So these lives are, or lower lives they are very veiled and must be drawn upwards, lifted upwards. They cannot enter the higher unveiled regions by themselves. A man is interesting because he's partially veiled and partially unveiled. He is a middle life in a way. Man, therefore, acts as the mediator. And man is, remember, man is Mercury in its hierarchical rulership of Scorpio. And in him and through him can be worked out group methods and laws which in a later solar system, will it be the next solar system? How many can there be? Will it be the next solar system? Sometimes we're told that there will be seven, but that the next one is final and it's the sixth. So, you know, we have to see how we count the seven. Which in a later solar system can be a basic law for unified work. So man has much preparatory work to do in this system. Man has much preparatory work to do. It is this fact which brings about so much of the peculiar trouble and nature of the human kingdom. You know, trying to be the mediator and working out group methods, trying to work out group methods, which later can be used. And it might be here said that on our planet, which is, it must be remembered, one of the profane planets outside the wall of the temple, outside the fence or wall of the temple, outside the fence or wall of the temple, it stands before the entrance of the temple. It hasn't really entered into the temple. Anybody who has a Brahmic consciousness captivated by the third aspect is, from that perspective, profane. Excuse me. As it were, not really within the energy system of the temple. One of the profane planets, certain experiments in connection with this problem have been undertaken by our planetary logos. And it might be said that on our planet, which is, it must be remembered, one of the profane planets, certain experiments in connection with this problem of has been undertaken by our planetary logos. What is this problem? The reconciliation of the three types of lives. The lifting of the lower lives by the use of the energy of the higher lives by man, the middle type of life. So certain of our planetary logos is becoming, if anything, more psychological with his second ray soul. So this is, I suppose, an experiment in planetary psychology. These, if successful, will result in a great expansion of the knowledge of the planetary logos regarding the laws governing all bodies and masses. So this is the our planetary logos has his own curriculum, as we will in later stages of the way of higher evolution. Our planetary logos has been given the name of, this is so interesting, the experimenting divine physicist. Is there transmutation involved? Our planetary logos is not having such a fifth ray focus, nor does it seem such a seventh ray focus either. But apparently that is not preventing these kinds of experiments, which will help to bring together, maybe via man as mediator, these two groups of lives. The ones that are full of burning matter and veiled in smoke, and the ones that are too cold, perhaps viewed as ever beholding the face of the ruler of the deep, but not descending into the dense physical body of the planetary logos or of the solar logos. They are just a little different, those two dense physical bodies, as I've been trying to say. So our planetary logos have been given the name of the experimenting divine physicist. It is this condition which makes the humanity of this planet unique in some respects. So they are graduates of painful endeavor, adjudicators between the opposites. They are a struggling group and may be regarded as working out two main problems. The problem of establishing a conscious relation and response to the animal kingdom. The first task or problem of our humanity. Establishing a conscious relation and response to the animal kingdom. The humanity does share with the animal kingdom, the animal body. Humanity shares with the animal kingdom, the animal body, and the problem of simultaneously receiving and holding vibrations from superhuman lives and of transmitting them consciously to the subhuman states. This is certainly a mediating function. And we are learning through meditation to receive and hold the vibrations from the superhuman lives. And in our care for the lower kingdoms, we are learning to transmit So we find ourselves at a midway point. It's almost as if we have to really be identified with the planetary soul, mediating between spirit and body. I'm thinking, you know, it's kind of peculiar when you look at the scale of 12 notes rising through semitones in the octave of music. Scorpio, when you start at the note C, let us say, Scorpio occupies the note G, which is associated with the soul vibration. It's 1.5 times the frequency of the note Do, which is the bass note, should we say, of matter. And humanity, identified as Scorpio, has to fulfill the function of this dominant note. Humanity identified with Scorpio must fulfill the function of the fifth, or it's called the dominant, whose frequency is 3/2 when compared to the bass note of matter. It is a soul function. So we have Scorpio and the triumphant, or the word is dominant, soul. Now there are other ways, of course, to assign the zodiacal signs to the notes, and the 12-fold division seems legitimate in terms of the heart center, but there are other divisions of the octave as well. So all of that is coming up for revelation. All this has to be accomplished by the units of the human kingdom in full individual consciousness. And the work of each human being might be regarded, therefore, as having in view the establishment of a sympathetic relation with other human units and with the petries of the animal kingdom. and also the development of the power to act as the transmitter of energies from greater lives than his own, and to become a transmuting, mediating agent. Whether it's their upward and downward transmutation, there's certainly the need to transmute that which is lower and raise it into the presence of that which is high. There is the need to transmute that which is lower and raise it into the presence of that which is higher. To transmute that. And maybe we can. That which is lower, and to raise it into the presence. There's also the need to, in a way, transform the intensity of that which is higher, or to be transduce, perhaps. A transducer? What does the transducer do? Let's check that out in one of our the instant mind access. Transducer. What is it? Oh, no, this is not what we want. Transducer, Wikipedia. It's a device that converts a signal in one form of energy to another form of energy. Excuse me. So, while the term transducer commonly implies the use of a sensor detector, any device which converts energy can be considered a transducer. Transducers are widely used in measuring instruments. Well, I think it's a close enough definition. Perhaps, you know, converting spiritual energy into soul energy, into material energy, perhaps, in a sense, man is also a transducer, converting fire by friction into solar fire, into spirit fire, or electric fire, and vice versa. So, we have a responsibility above and a responsibility below, and humanity, I think, must awaken to this dual responsibility. It's another way of, it's another insight into the dual life of humanity or of discipleship. To look above, to help below. To dream not, nor to rest. This is in the one of the discipleship mantras. To look above, and using the energy of that which is above to help below. To convey, to conduct man, the transducing conductor of that which is above, to that which is below. And we're learning to do this, and somewhat inevitably it happens when we receive the higher energies and begin to radiate them. We can do this consciously, of course, and eventually we have to do this consciously, but we are, in a sense, a radiation. What we are is emitted. What we contact from above is transmitted. Maybe I should put that down. What we are is emitted. What we contact above is transmitted through us. And we have to become, the Tibetan tells us, transparent to that transmission. We have to become increasingly transparent to that transmission. Of course, we do add our own emitted quality to that which is transmitted through us. Just the way a planet, let's say, we have the Lord of the constellation Aries working through the Lord of the constellation Mars, and the Aries energy is transmitted through Mars, but the emission of Martian energy joins that transmission. None of us is purely transparent, and we are always adding our particular quality. Even, for instance, if you are responding to one of the esoteric planets in your relationship to a particular sign, it doesn't mean you are not responding to the orthodox ruler as well. And so the transmission from the esoteric planet will be joined by the quality of the orthodox planet. It's another way of looking at the situation. Not exact, but close. So what are we touching that we can transmit, and what is our normal state of emission? And we will say that as we continue our transmissions, the quality of our emissions increases. So the quality of our emissions will increase as we more successfully transmit the higher energies. It might be of interest here to note that it is the problem of establishing a relation between the animal and himself which was the original basis of what is called Hatha Yoga and Tantric magic. This is, dating from Lemurian times. There was a man working etherically, and then his animal nature responding more to the instinctual pulls of still denser matter. The link was sought in this yoga with that which was known to be similar in the two kingdoms, the physical body with its activities and purposes, and that which should be negative in the human kingdom was stimulated into a positive agency through the power of will. So the relationship between the animal and himself, or relationship between the animal body, between the self and the animal body, which man possesses as an instrument. The link was sought in this early yoga, maybe a form of Laya yoga, Hatha yoga, the stimulation of the physical body, deliberate stimulation, with that which was known to be similar in the two kingdoms, the physical body with its activities and purposes, and that which should be negative in the human kingdom, was stimulated into a positive agency through the power of will. And, you know, in some ways, this is being recapitulated today. There is so much attention given to the dense physical body. But maybe, really, this is vitality training. That followers of Hatha Yoga are not aware of this purpose may be true, but the originating exponents of the Hatha Yoga mysteries were well aware of this objective, and in their zeal for unity between the two kingdoms, sought unity in the lower aspects and neglected the real method. So I think DK is somehow telling us that Hatha Yoga is really of the past. I mean, some use it for exercise, but it is not the union towards which advancing human beings should be striving. So we do share with the animal kingdom the animal body, and the true self, in a way, doesn't extend any lower than the etheric body. But we have to come to terms with the animal Can we leave the animal body to automatic functioning? This is what is desirable. We must leave the animal body to automatic functioning. And an aspect of our nervous system takes care of this. In other words, let's put it like this. We don't have to beat. We don't have to. Let's get that. Beat our heart. Our heart beats. We don't have to pulse our pulse. We don't have to drive our circulation. We don't have to digest our food with deliberation, because that is taken care of automatically. So we can build upon these automaticisms and not interfere with them. Can you stop your heart? Well, some people can. Can you suspend your breath? Well, some people can. This can be done by an act of will and maybe for some high spiritual purposes, but normally it's best not to interfere with the beating of the heart or the taking of the breath, that the automatic function be allowed to run its course in relation to a well-regulated etheric body. And in relation to the etheric body, we can, in the Aquarian age, which is in many ways an etheric age, lower ethers and higher ethers, we can pay attention to those energy flows. It's always interesting how human beings get fascinated with some aspect of spirituality which may or may not be truly progressive. It's different enough and interesting because it's different, but it may not really be progressive when considering the long history of the human being. So this is the end of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 8A, and we are on page, just beginning page 1213. And beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 8B and page 1213.